June 15th, 2015, meeting of the Open Space Advisory Committee meeting to order. We're going to get Alan Welch on the phone, so we'll give staff a minute to accomplish that. Alan, Bruce Scott here. Can you hear us?
I sure can, Bruce.
Good to have you with us. Thanks for taking the time to join us by phone. We have our meeting here today. Donna is here, Howard is here, Toby is here, and I am here, and you are here by phone. So we have five of our seven members. So I just called the meeting to order a second ago. We'll go ahead now with a roll call, if we could.
Chairperson Scott.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Riedel.
Here.
Member Evans. Member Fitzsimmons. Member Inverson.
Here.
Member Welburn.
Here.
Member Welch.
Here by phone.
Thank you. A quorum is present.
Thank you. Okay. At this point, we have an opportunity for public comment. The public is nodding no comment at this time, so we will move on to agenda item number one, which is the possible action on approval of the minutes for our last meeting, which was April 27, 2015. Are there any comments or corrections? Hearing none, do we have a motion?
Move to approve the minutes of the Monday, April 27th, 2015 Open Space Advisory Committee meeting.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that the minutes of the April 27th meeting be approved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Alan votes aye. Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any modifications to the agenda?
No modifications, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Next item, then, is item 3A, discussion only regarding the process and potential projects for submittal to the Southern Nevada Public Lands Management Act's Parks, Trails, and Natural Areas Grant Program. We got kind of a taste of this last time. There's more information in our packet and more background. And Roger, who's going to take the lead in that one?
I'm going to take the lead on it, and, of course, Ann, as always, and Rich, welcome to pipe in at any time they like. So we're going to try to weave you through this. I don't want to completely go over what we did last time, but it was 2 months ago, and if you're like me, I don't even remember writing the staff report last time. So we'll touch a little bit, just kind of a little bit of a refresher. But at the March 16, 2015 meeting, staff introduced a discussion regarding a process to select projects for submittal to the Southern Nevada Public Lands Management Act, Parks, Trails, and Natural Areas. And they go by the acronym of SNPLMA, of course, and PPNA. And in your packet, you have an Open Space Advisory Committee minutes from that March 16, or staff report from that March 16, 2015 meeting. You also have a SNPLMA Round 15 nomination package with all the requirements for the Parks, Trails, and Natural Areas category. You have samples of successful projects, and you have the SNPLMA strategic plan for FY 2015 to 2019. As a reminder, the SNPLMA PTNA program is going to go through a biannual funding process, so every 2 years we'll have money available. It appears that Land transactions by the BLM are picking up in Clark County. So they're suspecting more money into the program, which, of course, is going to increase the shares for everybody, possible shares. The PTNA program is one of seven programs, I think, that are funded through the SNPLMA program. I just received some information from the SNPLMA today that as of May 15th, they've sold over $19 million in property down in Clark County. And that funding will go towards, you know, of course, the SNPMA program. So that's a good sign that it looks like things are improving. But I do want to kind of just briefly go over some things we talked about last time. As I mentioned, this PTNA is one of seven grant programs that SNPMA manages. This year, there was approximately $30 million available for all the SNPMA categories, all the seven programs, with approximately $4.5 million of that amount was earmarked for the parks, trails, and natural areas. The next round may have, just kind of guessing at this point by SNPMA, may be as high as $50 million, which could equate into $7 million, you know, for the program, the PTNA program. Now, that's still, you know, a pittance compared to what happened, you know, a decade ago or more. But it's a sign that things are picking up. For a while, I think a couple years ago, it was $2 or $3 million mm-hmm. that was available for the whole PTNA program. The PTNA's highest priorities are projects that meet the following criteria. We talked about this last time. Projects that serve communities or identified populations within communities that have been traditionally underserved. Projects that promote connectivity that link people to nature and to recreational opportunities and unites places across the landscape. Projects that protect the integrity of the community resources, including natural, cultural, historical, educational, environmental, and open spaces. And projects that minimize future maintenance and the replacement costs and show a high degree of sustainability. We think it's really important that we take kind of a proactive effort this year to submit a program or a project. We haven't submitted the last project because our project hadn't been completed yet at this point. And we didn't have, at that time, a cash-type match. That requirement has seemed to gone away a little bit, I guess, maybe with the extra funding involved in the program. So we don't really have to worry too much about the cash match part of the program. So I think it's really time that we become aggressive and try to get at least one project nominated, maybe if not two. And as we talked about, we talked about we're going to bring the same process to the Park and Recreation Commission and get their input as well. And it may be conceivable that somewhere down the line we may have a joint meeting with Open Space and Parks and Recreation Commission to ferret out what kind of projects or what projects we want to submit. Our thought is that we would almost run this through a mini PTNA ranking process so that, and maybe tonight we won't have time really to brainstorm ideas. We can do that if the committee would like to, but come up with some ideas, maybe come up with some estimated costs. They'd be, at this point, they would be pretty much short-sleeve estimates, and run them through the criteria of PTNA, and actually have the two committees be the committees that actually rank the projects, with the idea that the highest project or the highest projects would move forward then to the PTNA for funding. Again, the grant applications for round 16 will be due in the fall of 2016. So we've got about a year, you know, almost a year to try to get this settled. And then the funding would be available in 2017. Generally, the applications are due in the fall. I sit on the committee, on the ranking committee. We usually have a meeting in early February down in Las Vegas at the BLM office. At that time, everybody who is submitting a project gives a short presentation on the project. There's discussion about the projects. We have that set of criteria that you have in your packet, and we go through a ranking process. From there, that recommendation is brought forward to what they call the Partners Working Group. They make a recommendation based on the PTNA subgroup's recommendation. Then it goes to the Executive Committee for their recommendation, and then finally to the Secretary of Interior for the final decision. So it's quite a process to go through. It takes quite a bit of time. The programs that have received, the programs that were submitted in round 15 have just now been notified whether they are going to be funded or not. So it takes some time to get through the, you know, the works. I gave you a couple of additional handouts. One is the information again that I received today. This is the one that has kind of the purple printing. And Alan, I apologize, you're at a disadvantage since you don't have these handouts. But this is the one where it basically says which of the projects that were submitted for round 15 are going to receive funding. And we can kind of go over that in some more detail. The other one I gave you is titled Southern Nevada Public Lands Management Act, and it has operating guidelines. And there's a highlight there in orange. It says PTNA strategic goals. I think for the public's benefit and for Alan's benefit, I'd like to go ahead and read those goals. The PTNA strategic goals provide or improve existing park, trail, or natural area to meet the demand and changing demographics of residents and visitors. Protect to improve the integrity of resources, community, cultural, educational, environmental, historical, open space, and recreational, while addressing the quality of the human experience. Connect parks, trails, and natural areas to form an integrated and accessible system. Ensure that the cost and value of investment is considered well-stated and reasonable. Encourage partnership and collaboration between projects, advocates, nonprofit groups, state government, and other local governments to enhance both financial and programmatic opportunities. And then right below that, you'll see how the membership of the PTNA is comprised of. We have assistant district manager for the SNPLMA program with the BLM as a non-voting member. We have a representative of Clark County, representative of the Southern Nevada Water Authority, representative of the City of Las Vegas, representative of the City of North Las Vegas, representative City of Henderson, representative Lincoln County, representative White Pine County, representative Carson City. I think it's interesting that they put Carson City, Nevada, just in case we weren't sure where Carson City was. And then representative of Clark County Regional Flood Control District, and then the program manager, PTNA, BLMA, or BLM, Southern Nevada District, again, another non-voting advisor. So that kind of gives you, I think, maybe a little bit of maybe an idea of how the process works. If you look in your packet, and you turn over to page 10, 11, you can get an idea. This is exactly the same criteria that we work with when we're ranking the projects. Now, we get a very nice three-ring binder with all the project applications in it, color photos of the projects, basically the presentation that's going to be presented at the PTNA ranking meeting. But every project is run through this criteria. And I don't want to bore everybody, but I do want to go over a little bit of what the criteria includes. Again, for Alan's benefit and for the public. The first criteria is demand. And this provides a new or improved an existing park, trail, or natural area to meet the demands, changing demographics of residents and the visitors. And there's a little box there, and there's A through D with sub criteria in there. And you rank each project how well it adheres or fits to that criteria, with the maximum number of points being 5 points. So you can see in this case, under demand, under the five subcategories, there's a possibility potential of getting 20 points. Under resources, is protects or improves the integrity of resources, community, cultural, educational, environmental, historical, open space, and recreational, while addressing the quality of the human experience. Again, there's five categories under that for a total potential score of 20 points. Then you go to connectivity, promotes connectivity that links people to nature and to recreational opportunities and unites important places across the landscape. And again, another five categories in there for a possible points of 20. And then the cost of, and value of investment. Evaluates, describes, and considers the cost and benefits of the projects and factors. And this is where they really look for projects that have minimal amount of maintenance. They look for a commitment by the grantee that that they will be responsible and are committed to the maintenance. And so they also look for evidence of long-term sustainability in the maintenance of the project. Before we get too far further, I know I've already thrown a lot at you already. Are there any questions at this point about how that process works? Donna?
I have one question, and I know I've probably heard the answer before, but it eludes me at this point. Why is there only a southern area, and why are we involved in the southern area? Why is there not a northern
depot? You know, that's a good question, I probably can't give you a definitive answer. I suspect that because of the tremendous growth that Clark County, you know, has been experienced over the last few decades, and because of, you know, that, just like the rest of Nevada, it's 80% BLM or government-owned property. In order for Las Vegas to continue to grow, there has to be a mechanism to turn that property over into private hands, you know, for future development. And Carson City has only been in the SNPLA program since the passage of the Omnibus Public Lands Management Act. Since that act was passed, it included Carson City's involvement in the program. Until just really recently, it was pretty much all Clark County jurisdictions that were allowed in the program. Now they have expanded out in the PTNA program. White Pine County is allowed in the program. I think a couple of maybe other rural counties. Washoe County to a very limited extent. I think maybe Washoe County is only
Ballardini
Ranch. Yes, it was one specific project. So why they don't have a Northern Nevada Public Management Act, I can't say. Maybe it's because there's not the same pressure up here for, you know, the expansion into public lands as there is down there. Yeah, you certainly can.
One thing I will add to that, just recently the Douglas County landfill was introduced in Congress, and their bill also will include Douglas County and the SNPLMA. So we will have one more competitor if passed.
Yeah, just a general observation, and Roger, we'll let you go ahead and finish your presentation.
Sure.
But it seems to me this is a great opportunity for us, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. But one of the things I think that's going to be critical is getting a successful finish to the project we have now with
their
funding, so that we can demonstrate that we can follow through and get it done. So that project is on its way, and that'll, I think, be helpful. But, Roger, why don't you go ahead and finish, and then we can talk about it from the committee perspective.
Sure. And that's, you know, that's a really good point you just made. And I'll give you a concrete example why it's a good point. If projects lapse, I think, 5 years or more in their completion, then they get put on what they call, it's a status, a focus of concern. And if you have too many projects, if you're a jurisdiction, a community that has too many projects in focus of concern, that may hamper your ability to apply for any more projects. And several communities are at that point. Henderson, Nevada is one of them that has several projects out there that are focus of concern. And they they lost some funding this year because of that, and they may not be able to apply for the next round if they don't catch up with those projects. So, you know, it's a good thing for us if they stay in that category, because, you know, that's just reduces the competition, you know, by one more. So, you know, one of the things that has changed in their criteria, and we've talked about this a little bit, but has been the emphasis on serving communities and populations that have traditionally been underserved. And that's kind of a new one, maybe the last three rounds of this PTNA program. And if you look at further into your packet, page 17 of the SNPMA annual report, it has a definition there for underserved communities. And I just want to point this out, because as we are talking about potential projects, this is one you want to put in your hip pocket and kind of remember, because if a project can show that they are serving traditionally underserved property or populations, that's a big plus in the ranking. So it says communities or identified populations in communities that have been traditionally underserved in the provisions of parks, trails, and natural area facilities and services. This includes communities who have faced social or economic barriers that had limited their access or connection to healthy natural environments. Nominations for projects to address the underserved community needs will describe the community served and how the project meets that need. So that's a really key point. So I think you're probably getting the idea, and we talked about this again in the past, that projects that can connect people to the natural environment, projects that provide connectivity throughout a community, and projects that serve the traditionally underserved communities is really where it's at. You know, if you can hit on all four of those, and, of course, as I mentioned earlier, projects that show a great deal of sustainability in the maintenance of those projects are really what you want to focus on. If you get all those, you're in really good shape. And we had several projects this past application process that didn't touch on all those, and consequently they didn't get funded. And they're very good projects. They just didn't have kind of all those categories. You have, which page do you have there? Yeah, okay, good. If you'll turn for a minute to this handout that has, again, the orange highlight on the PTNA strategic goals. And if you turn back, if you go to the second to last page, it's listed as page 10. You can see a chart. This is this was a recommendation by the PTNA subgroup during their ranking session for round 15. And I want to point this out just so you kind of see how the ranking works. Over on the left-hand corner, you can see the rank, then the agency, the project name, and then you can see under those four criteria, you can see the total points that a project earned in the ranking, the total points, and then the average point, and then the percent total points of the maximum 640 points you can, or 80 points that you can receive, and the amount requested, and then they keep a cumulative tab. We had about $4 million, I think, in available money for round 15. And we had over $15 million in requests. So you can see, you know, the competition is pretty tight. Going down that, I just want to point out some of the nomination, the successful ones. If you turn the next page, you'll see the round 15 subgroup ranking. And this is what came from the group that I sit in. And you can see the ones that are ranked. The Kyle Ranch Historic Park Phase 3B. That's the other thing that the PTNA program, likes to, they like phased projects, and they place a high emphasis on continuing to fund, you know, the other phases of a project. The second one was the Caliente mountain bike trail system. They built a mountain bike trail system in a mountain bike park, or they're going to. The Warm Springs Natural Area Public Use Enhancement was tied with that at number two. The Wetlands Park Education Nature Connection Center in Clark County was fourth. And then they had the Pueblo Trail Enhancements with the City of Henderson and the Silver Bowl Complex Trails with Clark County. What I think happened, if we go back to the page here that I got today that I handed out to you with the purple print on it, you can actually see this is the ones that for sure, that was our recommendation. This one shows you which ones were actually funded. So on the very first page, the Kyle Ranch Historic Park was funded as total amount, total request amount is $695,000. The Caliente Mountain Bike Trail System received $495,000. Warm Springs Natural Area, $875,000. The Wetlands Park Education Nature Center from Clark County, $1.6 million. The River Mountain Loop Trail System was out of the money at zero. The Pueblo Trail Enhancements, City of Henderson, was out of the money because of their number of projects that were on the focus of concern. And so in place, they jumped the Silver Bowl Complex Trail from Clark County, moved up at just over $1 million. And those were all the ones that received funding. So it was interesting. The City of Henderson had a very large project. It was an adaptive youth sports complex, a very neat project, an outdoor athletic field complex, including basketball courts, soccer fields, baseball, softball, football fields, multi-use fields that are all geared towards adaptive sports, people with disabilities. It's going to be the only, if it's built, it'll be the only sport complex like that in the state of Nevada. They were asking for $5.1 million, which was more than the money that was available in the program. But it really didn't have all those components. It didn't have a strong connectivity of people out to the natural areas. You know, it didn't have some of those other aspects in the criteria that they're looking for. So therefore, it didn't receive funding. Plus, the $5.1 million, you know, pretty much priced them. Themselves out of the program. Find my notes here. Okay, so we went over the scoring criteria. We reviewed the strategic goals. We talked about what round 15 projects were funded and which ones weren't. You know, at this point, again, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them. Or if you want to even spend some time maybe talking about projects that may be projects that we consider, what I would like to do is if you have some of those projects now, and staff, of course, can have some input too, at the next. Yes, Allie.
Yeah, a couple quick questions. One is, do you envision that Carson would only submit a single project? And second, is there a definition of a population being underserved?
Alan, if you don't have that information with you in front of you, then I apologize again for that. But if you look at what was submitted last year, the city of North Las Vegas, I think, submitted three projects. And Henderson typically will submit one or two, Clark County the same. I think it's very conceivable that Carson City could submit more than one project. Now, one of the problems you run into is that you are competing against yourself a little bit to a certain degree. They almost always ask you in the final analysis if both of your projects look like they're in consideration, they'll almost always ask what the preference is between the two projects. And sometimes the jurisdictions will answer that. Sometimes they'll say there's no preference. I've seen it before where they've said no preference and they actually It really was their highest preferred project. I think your other question was about the underserved community, the definition.
How is population, you know, designated as underserved? How does that?
Well,
how do you define that, I guess?
Well, the definition is that, you know, they are communities or communities within communities. For instance, in Carson City, a very real sense of that would be our Hispanic or Latino community within our city, within our larger community, could be considered an underserved community. We submitted a project a couple of years ago that didn't get funded. It was a little over $500,000. It was the largest submittal at that time. And it was to build a small soccer complex up at John D. Winter Centennial Park. They loved the project because it was serving – the light went off. I don't know if it – okay. They liked the project because it served an underserved community because it was a complex geared towards our adult Hispanic soccer players or adult soccer players who are 90% Hispanic. And they don't have – regulation-sized soccer fields, so they were underserved in that area. If you have a poor or disadvantaged community that would have a project that would connect the people in that community to the great outdoors, to the natural areas with a trail system that went through and maybe had interpretation aspects to it that led to a larger trail system that was able to provide a conduit for people to either through pedestrian means or riding bikes to enjoy the natural areas. Those would be also considered an underserved community. So does that kind of answer that question for you, Alan?
Yes, thanks a lot.
Now, they also typically look at some of these smaller rural Nevada towns as just being underserved in their totality, because the funding has been so sparse for recreational and conservation projects that these communities really haven't been able to afford them. And usually at least one small community receives funding. The one that happened in round 15 was Caliente receiving funding for their mountain bike park and their mountain bike trail system. So traditionally, real small rural communities are thought of as being underserved and that they don't have the recreational amenities that, you know, Henderson has and Las Vegas and those type of communities.
So. Roger, and maybe staff overall, it would seem to me that if Carson could come up with a combined project, it might be helpful. I'm wondering if something in the neighborhood, in the realm of maybe trails and trailhead phase project that would allow us to take advantage of the trail information, the trail ownership we have now and control, the idea of putting trailheads in areas where you might have underserved locations and fitting into a bigger picture that could be phased might be a way to try to identify a project that would meet some of the criteria and at the same time put us and the Parks and Recreation Commission kind of focused together on a bigger project that had phases that we would both have direct interest in as at least a possible consideration.
That's a really good point, and I think Ann would agree with me that the Park and Recreation Commission places a high value on trails. You know, they're big promoters of trails. And so that would be maybe a commonality, as you just put it, that it may be a good place for both committees to work together. I don't know if we're ready for this yet, but a future round, if not this round, since Douglas County is now in the program, might be a combination of trailheads and trails and connectivity with Carson Valley trails and our trails and maybe even the Tahoe Rim Trail, you know, to really kind of develop a regional approach to to a trail system here. In the Las Vegas Valley, they have a, I think it's called the Valley Trail System, and it's a trail system that's going to go around, that's a huge valley. It's going to go around the whole trails, that whole valley, circumnavigate the whole valley, and it takes in almost every jurisdiction, political jurisdiction in the valley. And so they all have a piece of it, and it almost always gets some funding because they like that idea of regionalism, connectivity, and phased-in projects. So that's a really good point.
Can this grant money be used for acquisition of easements or trails?
It can be used for acquisition of property, and I'd have to check and see if that includes easements. I think it probably does. But it's confined to the river area within the 100-year floodplain for acquisitions.
Because it would seem to me that part of the local match might be the ongoing acquisition of linkages and pieces as part of a 2 and 3 and 4 year down the road type of thing. But, we have basically a year to plan and execute here. Mm-hmm. And that might be a possibility. I don't know what other members of the committee, what your thoughts are, but why don't we get everybody's thoughts in terms of possible projects or the kinds of things that we'd like to see explored here. Donna.
I made it really clear that, project that I favor is going to be the rail trail, the Virginia and Truckee Rail Trail and Carson River Trail, which would go from Hobart Road all the way through town, which gives us really good connectivity into the Carson River Canyon along the railroad up to Virginia City, and then where it turns north to go up to Virginia City along the river to Lyon County. And we've already heard unofficially from Lyon County they want to continue that trail out to Lake Lahontan. So that would be a real phased project. And with what the city is already doing with the improvements along Highway 50 on the multi-use path, which would be part of this trail, would allow for definitely the underserved community to easily access then the rural part of the trail. So, and we're already working, Mark's been working very hard on getting that one north end section to Hobart Road to connect that up. So I see it as several phased parts of the project, and including one of the big parts is going to be crossing Highway 50. Eventually, we would either have to get the V&T to let us cantilever trail over on their bridge or a new bridge. So that's my project, which everybody's heard about this for how many years since the day I moved here, I think.
So you mentioned Hobart Road, so you're actually talking about even connecting the V&T trail over here on the northwest corner of the town and have to go all the way through up the Carson River Canyon and Lyon County to even towards VC. Huh?
And Story County. So,
and Story County, yeah.
So I'm talking about connecting four counties.
Howard, do you have any thoughts?
My thought is, I guess I'm not familiar with the status of the bike trail that connects Highway 50 down to the Buckeye Road area. Are we fully funded for that? Are we set for that, or are we looking for other resources? Because
would be my understanding, and Public Works has taken the lead on that project, and they're funding through federal highways.
Okay, so that's done. Because I was going to say, if we can get more paved bicycle trails on the east side of the interstate or the bypass, then that's a very low-income, underserved area. And I like your idea of getting that access from the east side of the city down into the river would be, I think, a great face project.
I've kind of had some involvement in the freeway multi-use path because I'm on a couple of committees with that. And yes, it's funded Board of Supervisors did approval purchase of that strip of land. In fact, they went to RTC last week, I think it was, for final approval.
Okay, good.
So that's going to go at least to connect the linear ditch trail at 5th. Ultimately, it's going to go to Fairview. Now, another possible project, but we really aren't ready for it now, would be to continue from Fairview to the Douglas County line with that path. But we can't do anything with that until the bypass is completed. So that would be like for the next round.
Toby, any thoughts?
Where to start? I think a lot of what we could do definitely hinges on a lot of the paved routes that go through town, whether it's the V&T, the Carson River Trail. I mean, connecting anything on the east side or really any part of town to Prison Hill, Centennial, to any of the wilderness areas that way. But I also think probably a skills park located somewhere for mountain biking. A skills park located, it would be a nice to find a location for motorized use. Like a motorcycle skill park would be really nice. And then, you know, we talked about it several times, but potentially somewhere along the east side of the river of a nice multi-use trailhead with trailing facilities for horses and for motorized vehicles, and a launching point for long riding and hiking and river rafting. It just seems like it's a really nice point for that if we could locate the right place for it.
It seems to me from our comments that a lot of them relate to the idea of trails and trailheads. Would it make any sense to talk to the Parks and Recreation Commission to see if a joint project that we could coordinate on would make sense? I really think we don't want to be in a position of having somebody tell us, you've got two projects, what's your first choice? I'd really like to see us work together from a Carson City perspective if we can. And is that something that would be worth staff, say, feeling out with the Parks and Rec Commission to, you know, see what their thoughts are? Another thing that kind of goes with that might be kind of a broad brush, felt tip marker trail concept map that talks about some of these things and puts them into perspective and might allow us to pick and choose priorities with regard to underserved areas or focus and things like that, where we could get everybody looking at kind of the same thing, and also the number of phases that we might want to look at.
We're going to bring this same issue to the Park and Recreation Commission in their July meeting. So that's the first Tuesday in July. So if anybody would like to attend that meeting, you know, as a member of the public, you can do that. But at that point, we can talk about maybe setting aside the August meeting as a joint meeting. You have a meeting in August, and they also do, too. Maybe we could select a date for a joint meeting at that time.
Well, that sounds good. And perhaps if at their July meeting the informal discussion is positive, it might be helpful to have something from staff for the August meeting that looked at, you know, an overall map of what do we have now? Because I can see open space, one of our inputs potentially being, let's see about acquiring some trail linkages where we have holes. Parks might be, what about the acquisition of trailhead locations or something like that, where we could work together and at the same time be building on the same overall project.
In participation of this meeting and thinking about other projects that we've been working on, the draft management plan and where to start, where do we start this brainstorming? And so with Rich, we sat down and looked at some of the things that were identified in that plan, and there's no doubt we have a lot of improvements that were identified in that plan. And thinking ahead of phases and thinking big money, because some of these projects on the dollar scale, in a sense, are reasonable, and we can apply for rec trails, and that will be the next agenda item. But when you look at the price tag on some of these projects, the opportunities to ask for $500,000, and in here I talked about Silver Saddle Ranch, the Mexican Ditch Trail, and Prison Hill. Within that corridor, there's a lot of things that we can do to package it as phase one, phase two, phase three. And it includes more of the components of cultural, historical, environmental education to rank high. And safety. And for the Red House, maybe even compliance with codes to bring that up for ADA access.
No, that sounds good. We've got to be careful to get ourselves, keep ourselves focused, because we have so many things that we're either looking at or in the process of getting some of the some of the loose ends kept up is going to be helpful, and that may be, you know, I think it's a combination of keeping the committee and Parks and Rec involved, and at the same time continuing to move along with maybe some individual committee members providing input or support, and not overwhelming staff, but making sure we're getting the kind of criteria and the kind of approved plans or management elements in place so that when it comes time to justify an application, we've got the paperwork behind it that fits, even though we may have holes in the linkages or the needs for acquisition for trailhead locations or that type of thing. And again, maybe looking at the criteria to be sure we're hitting the underserved issue well might be a good way to help maybe strengthen our application for the snipple of funding. Alan, did you have anything to add?
No, thanks, Bruce.
Okay. Don't let us forget about you. Okay. Any more comment from the committee before we ask for public comment? Mr. Member of the Public, do you have any comments? Thanks, Morris. Okay. Staff, anything more on this one? This is a discussion item, but I hope you've gotten some inputs and some...
Well, we did, yeah. Very good input. So we'll see if we can set up a joint meeting.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good. Okay, we'll close item 3A and go to 3B. Discussion, and this is a possible action item, to recommend the staff develop a proposal identifying trailhead improvements on the north end of Prison Hill as identified in the Unified Pathways Master Plan in preparation for a grant application to be submitted next year to the Recreational Trails Program. Rich Wilkinson.
Good evening. I get to talk about the north end of Prison Hill. We are here seeking input from this committee on potential improvements to the north end of Prison Hill recreation area. If you've driven by Carson River Road or Fifth Street, you've probably observed a lot of activity in the last month or so. So I'm going to highlight that with a brief PowerPoint. But I wanted to point out that we're doing this in hopes of putting in for a Park Rec Trails grant through Division of State Parks, because we think it's a great opportunity to improve that area on Prison Hill. And so I've been trying to review all the master plans and unified pathways master plans to look at some of the activity that's preceded me. And it does define... in the Unified Pathways Master Plan, a trailhead for the north end of Prison Hill. And some of those features for a trailhead would be rules and regulations, interpretive type, signage, trash cans, dog disposal, stations, or not, that's not the right word. Close enough.
We're not disposing of dogs.
Shade structures, benches, lighting, and restrooms were some of the features that were highlighted in that plan. Also in the draft management plan in July of 2014, two of the recommended actions were to ensure that the area was prohibitive of OHV activity, which is part of the conservation easement with the BLM land transfer, and improving the parking lot with either restrooms, signage, those types of things. So we've been pretty busy working with BLM ahead of the land transfer to do some stuff. And so I'm going to hit the PowerPoint here just to show some of the activity in the last month or two. So the first step in early May was to post the area as closed. And so BLM provided Carsonites with the stickers for us to place. And as you can see in the sign, it identifies the activities that are allowed for this area on Prison Hill and the activities that are not allowed. And so that was one of the first steps. The second step was bringing in large rocks to block access points. This particular area is very close to the junction of Carson River Road and Fifth Street, so it really does not meet standards for having access at that point. And so the rock placement was actually done by BLM maintenance crew. And here's some more pictures of that work. And this is closer to the roundabout on Fifth Street. And one of the areas that we're looking at doing the Park Rec Trails grant is to close some of those areas and roads that we don't think are in appropriate areas. Based on the slope here, this is one spot that eventually that we'd like to look at the potential of putting that road to rest and reseeding it. Essentially, you have three access roads that are within 100 feet of each other. And so one of those areas can still remain open for equestrian and hiking access. And then one of the other problems we noted there was berming from berming around the outside edge of the parking area for motorcycle use, and it wasn't allowing the area to drain well. And so every time you had a rainfall, you had a mud bog. And so we worked with Public Works to come out at the end of May and the beginning of June to do some minor excavation so that that area would drain effectively. And so this is kind of what it looked like. And one of our next steps, this is to the north of that property, just across from Fifth Street. And this is the type of fencing that staff is going to be putting in place. The big reason for doing this is it kind of helps you define the area where people can park.
And it started today.
So this slide, I apologize, it's very difficult to see, but you can kind of see the areas that we're looking at doing the fencing. You'll notice that there's a swing gate on that main access road. Right about where the mouse is there. And the reason for that swing gate is to allow access for emergency or fire equipment if you need to get back in there. Just northwest of that is what you would call an ADA pass-through. It's a structure in place that would keep motorcycles and off-road vehicles out, but still allow for wheelchair access. And then just south is an area where a Y gate would be installed, and that would allow for equestrian users to still get through there as well, right about where the mouse is. And we do, on the north west end of the property, close to the roundabout, have another ADA pass through there. And that's where we were hoping to improve one trail and potentially remove a couple areas where there's pretty severe erosion. Down across from the school, this area is used quite a bit by the intermediate school. For some running and walking activities. And so in that location, we also have a pass through there and a section of fence that would be installed. And if you look on this slide here, this gives you an example of a swing gate that would be similar to what we're putting out there on the north end of Prison Hill. And just to the left of that is an equestrian Y gate, just so you get an idea of what it looks like. Here's a picture of the ADA pass-through, so you can see kind of what that looks like. And that's pretty much the activity that's taken place since the beginning of May with BLM. We're looking at the future grant with Recreation Trails Program so that we can maybe do some improvements to the parking facility. I know that some of the eligible options for treatment are to put roads to rest and improve trails, and that's one thing that we'd like to do. Other potential options would be maybe a restroom, improving signage in the area. I think that would be pretty critical for that spot, but we wanted to bring it before the committee to get your input for that area. And that's pretty much all I had. I'm sure Ann's got more to fill in.
So just to add to that, so the money that we're spending now on the fence can be used for a match on the recreational trails grant. So it's one of those, here we have an opportunity to do something and move forward. The match can be used up to 18 months prior to the grant's middle. So it's just an opportunity that we thought we should bring in front of the committee for your thoughts and recommendations.
To me, this is great. You know, we've acquired a piece of property that really is in need of management and guidance education. If I understand correctly, this is basically a non-motorized area. We're going to create an area where you can come in and park as a trailhead. It'll be off of the River Road side, and the rest of it will be signed and fenced and protected and potentially returned to native, or at least a lot of the trails will be obliterated, if you will. You know, it's interesting in the across from Buzzy's Ranch Road, you know, a few years ago, that area that we purchased, open space purchased, on the Prison Hill side of Carson River Road was pretty well obliterated. You know, there was a lot of roughed-in roads and that sort of thing. And if you look there now, you have to really look twice to see what hasn't gone back to nature. And it doesn't go real quickly, but it goes. And it's surprising. So to me, this is a great opportunity to do things. It ties into the Edmonds Trail nicely. The trail, you know, other work has been done going over to the middle school and connecting to, you know, other trails in the area. So I just see it as a great opportunity and a nice little package that we can put a fairly visible ownership, if you will, stamp on from an open space perspective on the new property that we've just acquired. So I think it's great. Other members, committee members, comments, thoughts?
I have a question. So what has the compliance been like regarding the motorized traffic there? Have they been complying with the signs? And
just from, obviously I'm not there that often, but just my observation when I go by the site, there wasn't too many times before that where I didn't see people actively out there with their vehicles or motorcycles, especially motorcycles. Since the placement of the signs and the rocks, it's been better. There's still a couple sections where they drive around the rocks, and you know, those are areas of concern, but I think that the fencing will ultimately help, and then potentially with the future ranger position too, maybe a little increased enforcement. But in my personal opinion, and Ann can expand on that, is that it's definitely a lot better than it was.
One other question. I'd never noticed this before, but project categories, walking, bicycling, and skating?
That comes straight from the recreational trails grant.
You know, those 2-inch by 2-inch signs are not exactly pushing the sign ordinance for size and visibility either. You know, if you're moving on a motorcycle, it may be quite easy to miss them.
Or go right over it.
Yeah. Other comments from the committee? Howard.
No, I support this project too. It's really important, I think, to transition into active management of these new BLM parcels that we're getting. Yeah, I've noticed a reduced amount of off-road vehicle use in that area, and it has never gotten any attention, really. very little. So I really support this project.
Toby, anything?
I definitely support it. I think it's a great area, and it's good that, you know, you guys are going. The work's being done. The nerdiness out of me is, you know, I want to see how quickly the vegetation comes back, and I'd like to, you know, see that logged and documented. But I think a trailhead right there is really good, too, just because of the population it serves and the access along the bike path right there. It's really nice.
Alan, did you have any question or comments?
No, I just support it as well. I think it's a great step forward.
Great. Thank you. From a question to staff, do we have a layout or design for a trailhead?
Not at this point, and Ann reminded me too today that there should be a public notice period too, especially with local residents, just to kind of get their input. But I don't think we have anything formally planned at this point.
What level do we need to make a grant application?
We'll need some decent level because the grant doesn't pay for planning. So we would need to pay for that ahead of time to also have good cost estimates and just ready to move forward with a project if awarded.
Is that something we can work with the Parks and Recreation Commission and possibly Vern or somebody in terms of a layout or a concept?
Vern's work schedule is very heavy, so it would probably be contracted out.
It's probably something we need to think of sooner rather than later than just to have the parameters. But Donna, do you have something?
Just one more question. Comment. I think it would be kind of important to include parking for horse trailers in that area.
We can certainly take a look at that. And if you take a look now, since Public Works has done grading on the site, it's amazing how large it is. We didn't grade really anything new. It is large, but on our Unified Pathways Master Plan, it is not identified for an equestrian trailhead. They identified equestrian use on Silver Saddle and on the west side of Prison Hill. But there is a large area.
Any public comment? No public comment. You are looking for action. Is that right, Rich? Okay. Is there any further discussion, or do we have a motion?
I'll make the motion. I move to recommend that staff develop a proposal identifying trailhead improvements on the north end of Prison Hill as identified in the Unified Pathways Master Plan in preparation for a grant application to be submitted next year to the Recreational Trails Program.
We have a second.
I'll second that.
Okay, any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Alan votes aye. Thank you, Alan. Okay. Item 4, staff updates. Discussion only regarding the update on the land conveyance from the Bureau of Land Management. Ann.
The update is we're in more management than we're prepared for, I think. As of last Thursday, we received the patent for some of the lands, but there's still a deed. And the difference between the patent and the deed is when BLM lands transfer for the first time, that is a patent. But if for some reason they have reverted back to the federal government and leave their hands a second or third time, then it's a deed. So last Thursday, we received the patent for some of the lands, which includes Prison Hill. But we've not received the deeds yet, but it's anticipated this week for the remaining lands.
That's a real milestone.
Real milestone. And, it's for real.
Yeah, no, that's great. Any public comment on that item? Okay, thank you.
Rich wanted to remind me as well that there are a few items that we're still tying up with BLM. We do need to finish the baseline. The field photos have been completed. We're just revising some of the wording. This Wednesday at BLM, and everyone's invited if you wish to join us, we're doing a cleanup out there in kind of a trash pile that accumulated over decades. But it is a partnership with BLM. They're providing the dump trailers, and we're working with NDF crews that will provide the labor. And just a few other items that we're tying up with them.
Where is the trash piles that you're picking up?
If you meet us by the riding arena, we will be walking or driving past the arena. And if you take the first trail to the left that travels across the bridge that the Friends of Silver Saddle replaced, the next left is a dead end, but to the trash pile.
Because I was just going to tell you that there's a whole new pile, several piles of construction trash, like somebody tore down a shed on the east side of the river. We just found that last week or the week before. I mean, it's a truckload worth of lumber and siding and stuff.
If I can follow up with you tomorrow to get a better accurate description, we can send our park ranger out there who also looks for receipts and follows up.
Okay. And my next question is, when is the party?
I've started those conversations both with the Kiwanis and with BLM. With BLM that we run a party, and with the Kiwanis, can we coordinate that to be held at Silver Saddle this year? I don't have an answer for you yet, but that is the initial discussion. So September.
Thank you. Yeah, on that dumping, if there's any forensic investigation that would be fruitful, it would be really helpful. Okay, anything else on that? All right, Rich, Riverbank stabilization.
Well, we're talking about the river that would be on the west side, on the Buzzy Ranch side, about a quarter mile, I guess, north of Lloyd's Bridge, or what used to be Lloyd's Bridge. Mm-hmm. There was about 500 feet of riverbank that was just a vertical bank. It was eroding, you know, even in low flow years. No native or desirable vegetation on the bank, so it was sloughing off. And Carson Valley Conservation District put in for and received some grants to do some bioengineering treatments down there. It was started in the fall of 2014, and they used the bioengineering crew from Dayton Valley Conservation District to harvest willows. And they took those willows from multiple areas where people didn't want them. One of them was near the area there, Carson River Park, by where you can launch your canoe. Those willows were planted, I believe, 3 weeks ago, or actually almost a month now. And there's two different techniques they use. There's a picture in your packet of the restoration. They used willow stream barbs that are tied into the bank, and then they duckbill anchor those into the ground. And then they also built a willow fascine, which ran along the toe of the entire project. And so that was completed a little under a month ago. That's an area that we'll probably keep our eye on. Bioengineering is a great tool, but it needs time to function. And in this particular design, which was done by Lin Zong, the willows weren't necessarily meant to grow. It's more of a way to dissipate energy, so your sediment will drop out, and then hopefully you'll get natural recruitment with willows in the future. So just wanted to provide a little information on that project.
Now, in the picture, how far around do we go? I see some vertical banks in the background. Kind of across that corner of the river.
Yeah, they with this design, they didn't. One thing that they didn't want to use was use equipment. From a permitting standpoint, that requires an extensive permitting process, and so they didn't shape the bank. They do, however, have areas where it's sloughed off, and so probably the bottom third of the toe, you have some material that is kind of held in place with this project. But it went from the start of the vertical cut bank upstream all the way to where you have natural willows growing downstream. And I think the total length is 500 feet.
So the vertical banks you can see in the picture are protected in terms of their toe.
Correct.
Yeah, they're just not moved around.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, some
I haven't
designs,
been out there to look at it, so.
Yeah. If One thing I would have recommended was potentially shaping that bank, because that gives you a better opportunity for vegetation to grow on that bank. But it wasn't, you know, a project that Carson City managed. So, but it, there is a potential that this is going to function well and trap sediment. And hopefully if we can get a few good years where we don't have a big water event, it'll kind of stabilize itself a little bit. But that's definitely something we'll keep our eye on.
Did they remove the barbed wire fence that was hanging over the river as well?
They did, and I believe that was actually done ahead of the project, and a new fence was put in.
Okay. Any other comments from the committee? Public comments? All right. Thank you, Rich. That's good. You know, it's like revegetation. Some years are better than others, but you keep working at it, and it's amazing over time what you can accomplish. All right. We're to future agenda items. Are there any staff comments or recommendations? Jennifer, this is your opportunity. All right. No?
We will just bring future items as we've been working with the committee and on our work plan.
All right. Thanks, Ann. Any items from the committee? Alan, any input from you on future agenda items?
No, thanks.
Okay, we have another opportunity for public comment. No public comment. All right. Any final staff comments or questions? Okay, are we ready to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
All right, meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.